my goodness. What's up, everybody? From a Blankenfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, it's People Pleaser. Boy, this is like the first People Pleaser episode in maybe a month. It's been a minute. I don't know if I've done an episode since I returned home from Venice. I went to Venice for the Venice Film Festival. I came home, then I went to Pennsylvania for a few days for work, came home. I've been working on the Oneer podcast with Kramer. We've been having a lot of fun, but I thought, boy, I should do an episode of People Pleaser. It's been a minute. Let's do it. Let's get back into it. There's stuff to talk about, and we're here. Sarah Smart is here on TikTok because we're live on TikTok. What's up, Sarah? Sarah just sort of hounded me on Instagram and was like, how come you never go live anymore? And I said, you know what? Good point. Let's do it. We got a nice little studio audience here in the live feed on TikTok. We got some people joining us on YouTube. And to those of us listening somewhere else in time on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, hello to you as well. Welcome to the show. Some stuff to talk about initially before we get into the main meat of the show. I want to talk about just some thoughts I'm having heading into the final stretch as we make this last push going into November, going into this critical and crucial election. But first, before we get into the politics stuff, anybody watching Secret Lives of Mormon Wives? Because I just started watching that last night, and I'm already more than halfway through the season. I'll probably finish it by the end of the day. And boy, I have thoughts. I have feedback. I enjoy Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I like Real Housewives, but I gotta say, somebody on YouTube just said, dude, how many days in a row have you worn that shirt? Not even. I just got it out of the wash, and I have it on again. You're just seeing videos where I have it on. It's more like how many videos in a row have I worn it, and not even that. I've worn it in a couple videos, and you're just seeing the videos I've worn it in, but this is the first day in a row that I've worn this shirt. So cool it. And there's a reason why I'm wearing it, and it will become relevant later on in the episode. But I've always enjoyed Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I like the little glimpse into my hometown. If you don't know, I'm from Salt Lake City originally. I live in Los Angeles, but I am a Mormon boy from Salt Lake City. I don't practice. I'm not a practicing member of the LDS Church, but I am an official member of the LDS Church. I've never had my name removed from the records. So as far as their records officially are concerned, I am a baptized member. I'm not a tithe-paying member or a active participating member, and I don't believe in any of the truth claims of the LDS Church, but my family is Mormon. My friends are Mormon. I am culturally a Mormon boy from Utah. So when Real Housewives of Salt Lake City came on, I was like, oh, this is kind of fun, because you got the Lisa Barlows and you got the Heather Gays who are like bringing that, you know, kind of Jack Mormon flavor to the show. But Real Housewives doesn't really choose to focus on the Mormonness of it all. Real Housewives has quite a diverse cast as far as the women that you could have populated a show like that in Salt Lake. They chose an ideologically more ideologically diverse cast than you would expect from Salt Lake City. But Real Housewives is part of the Real Housewives brand, right? It's part of the Bravo Real Housewives TV brand. So that it's just another Real Housewives show. It can't be Real Mormon Housewives. It's Real Housewives of Salt Lake. It's Real Housewives of Orange County. Real Housewives of New York. Real Housewives of Potomac. It's just another one of those shows. So of course Mormonism is going to come up in Real Housewives of Salt Lake, but it's not the focus. Mormonism is so much more front and center in Secret Lives of Mormon Wives on Hulu. And I'm eating it up. I'm loving watching this because, boy, is it – what's so interesting is watching the Mormon church's response to this show, because it's been – they've had to come out and talk about it and address it, in their PR. And what they've been doing, and not just the Mormon church officially, but a lot of my LDS friends, the response seems to be, well, that's not us. Look, it's unfortunate that that's the public-facing image, is this show on Hulu that's really sensationalized, and this is what the world is seeing, but that's not what Mormonism is. Those women are not representative of our actual values and the way that we actually are. And here's the tea that I'm going to let you know. Yes, it is. I'm just going to let you know right now, I'm from Salt Lake City, born and raised. Yes, it is. Though the women on that show, that is what Mormon women from Utah are like. And it comes in a lot more shades, obviously, than what is just represented by the, you know, 7 or 8 main characters on that show. There's obviously a lot more degrees to which, you know, people's personal devotion to the actual religion it shows up. But those women represent a very real, very big demographic in Utah. And for the Mormon church to pretend like these are these kind of pretenders, these outliers that don't really represent Mormon culture, and for Mormon people to come forward and go, hey, that's not us, that's not who we are, I'm like, what? Either you are displaying a drastic lack of self-awareness, or you're just being dishonest. You're not being honest with the fact that, like, no, they absolutely, those women are Mormon. Unquestionably. There's so many markers where it's like, that show shows them praying several times. If you know anything about LDS culture, like, they got the prayer down pat. They got all of it down. Dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this day. We're grateful we could all get together. Please bless that this food will nourish and strengthen our bodies. They got it down, dude. And I say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Is the way that it goes, okay? This is the other thing. It's like Mormon people like to pretend like they don't have rote prayers the way that some religions do, you know? Our Father, hallowed be thy name. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Stuff like that, where some religions have like rote prayers. You know, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Things like that. Mormons are like, we pray from the heart. We say, we improvise prayers. We actually speak to God. But it's like, when you watch the show, the girls do the prayer. And I know the prayer just like I know any other famous prayer, and it is, Dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this day. We're so thankful for all of our many blessings. We're thankful that we could all be together. Please bless. So first thing you do is, Dear Heavenly Father. Second thing you do is, we're thankful for, and you say we're thankful for 2 to 3 things. And usually it's, we're thankful for this day. We're thankful for, you know, the fact that we could all be together as a family. We're thankful for our many blessings. Then you say, please bless. And you say, please bless, if there's a specific person in the room who needs a blessing, please bless that everything will go well with so-and-so's job interview. Please bless that, you know, so-and-so's cancer will go into remission, whatever. Then if you're eating food, you say, please bless that this food will nourish and strengthen our bodies. please bless the missionaries in the mission field, said Shelby on TikTok, and it's 100%. Accurate. Please bless the missionaries of the mission field. what's funny about this is, like, it's never taught to you as a Mormon person. You don't sit down in church as a kid growing up, and they're not like, here's how you pray. You say, Dear Heavenly Father, then you say these things in this order. You say, nourish and strengthen our bodies. No one teaches you that. So Mormon people could have plausible deniability and say, that's not part of the doctrine. That's not part of our church. But, like, get real. Yeah, it is. There's a reason why everyone says it. Like, it is culturally absorbed and culturally learned. And one of my favorite parts of the show so far is Jen Affleck, who I laugh every single time they show her name, because whenever they show the other girls' names, it's always like Macy or Whitney or, you know, or Layla. And then when it shows Jen Affleck, it always writes her full name and just says Jen Affleck. Because her name is one letter different from Ben Affleck. So the show is like, this is Jen Affleck. this girl is Jen Affleck. But Jen Affleck is doing a prayer, and Jen Affleck is one of the most pious and self-righteous girls on the show. Like, one of the girls that really thinks of herself as like one of the most strong in the church girls. And she says the words, I had to pause it and rewind it like 5 times because I was like, did she just say what I think she just said? She says, please bless that this food will give us nourish and strength to our bodies. And I was like, oh, Jen never really learned the proper phrase. It's kind of like when you grow up and like you're hearing someone say, some people say a phrase over and over again and you mishear it your whole life. So like you hear people saying for all intents and purposes, but what you hear is intensive purposes. So you're like, oh, I always thought when I was growing up that people were saying for all intensive purposes and I just was mishearing it. And that's what I think happened with Jen Affleck is her whole life she heard people saying, please bless that this food will nourish and strengthen our bodies. And she didn't really like clock what that phrase was. So when she says it out loud, she kind of rushes through it, but she says, please bless that this food will give us nourish and strength to our bodies. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense, Jen, that this food will give us nourish and strength. Don't know what nourish is. Not a thing. But what it is she's just reciting the prayer. Anyway, I'm getting too bogged down in the prayer. My point is, my tea is, and this is no shade. Remember here, I am culturally Mormon, and I love Mormon people. I have a lot of affection, I should really say. My family, okay? People like my favorite people in the world, some of my closest friends are active LDS, and I love these people, and I have a lot of respect for these people. So don't get it twisted. This isn't a hit job. This isn't an attack job. This is just me responding to a show that is really popular right now and giving my feedback as a person who was raised in Salt Lake City and who knows the culture very well. If you watch that show and you're an active LDS person and you think, this is such a bummer because this isn't who we are, go back and think about it some more and watch it again maybe, because I'm here to say, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is, though. You know? And you doing that, you going, these girls aren't even like really actually active. Some of these girls are drinking alcohol. Some of these girls are not wearing garments and they're wearing like their cleavages out. You know, these girls are swinging. They're doing like they're not Mormons. If you're doing that, if you're sort of subjecting these women to a purity test and saying they don't pass the Mormon vibe check because they don't check off enough of the rules on my rule sheet for who is and who is not an official Mormon, you're doing what they're doing on the show. That's the interesting thing is like they do this on the show. A big aspect of this show is that the women of Mom Talk, the women of Mormon Mom Talk, are constantly subjecting each other to purity tests, to being like, well, I don't want so-and-so at my baby blessing because so-and-so is not pure enough. So-and-so brought alcohol to the hot tub party, so so-and-so is disinvited from the baby blessing. And they're always sort of parsing each other out by who is worthy to be in the friend group based on how often their church, how strong their church attendance is, and how well they're adhering to the cultural and religious rules of the Mormon church. And they are, it's a mixture of actual dogmatic rules and cultural rules. And that's the interesting thing too about this show. So I will say that if you're a Mormon person watching this show and you're going, these girls aren't even real Mormons, it's like they do that in the show. They accuse their friends of being not real Mormons or not really strong in the church because their friends aren't passing whatever arbitrary purity test they're creating for their friends in that moment. So you doing that and being like, they don't count. You're the same as them. You are doing the same thing they're doing. You're being the decider of who is worthy and who is unworthy. And that's what's on display in that show. So whether you are aware of it or not, whether you have that self-awareness in you or not, these women are indicative of major aspects of your culture. And if that bothers you, if it bothers you, I would suggest self-reflection and actually looking in the mirror and thinking, what is it about what I'm seeing here that rubs me the wrong way? Rather than just like say dismissing them and saying, they're not real Mormons anyway. But the other thing I was going to say is another big aspect of this show is sort of watching people create their own rules. And inside of that, they're sort of creating in their brain their own church. So they all sit under the umbrella of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that is already a church that has several different offshoots and different kind of brands. There's the mainstream LDS Church. That's the church that is headquartered in Salt Lake City, Utah, with the giant church office building that has the temples all over the place with the gold guy with the trumpet on the top. That's that church. But then there's the FLDS Church, the Fundamentalist LDS Church. There's the RLDS Church, the Reorganized LDS Church. There's lots of different offshoots. But the mainstream, main big hitter, the one that's worth, you know, like $200 billion, that's the one that's being represented on the show. And all these people exist under that umbrella, under the umbrella of that title, that mainstream LDS Church. But within that, the way that people sort of find a place for themselves, it seems, at least in the 21st century church, and I think it was this way the whole time I was growing up, is people just sort of decide what rules they're going to be hard about and what rules they're going to be a little bit softer about. And listen, I get it. I totally get being like, that rule, that this particular rule has never really vibed with me, and I don't really care for that. Like, telling me I can't watch rated R movies and I'm an adult and you're telling me which movies I can and can't watch, I'm going to choose which movies I want to watch and which ones I don't want to watch. Thank you very much. But I will see you on Sunday and I will pay a full tithe and I will get that temple recommend. Thank you very much. And like, I think people do this. They sort of carve out which spaces they're going to pay attention to and which spaces they're going to leave alone. And I'm fine with that. It's just that you exist inside of a church, a doctrine that's pretty hard, and it's pretty hard with these things. It's pretty high demand and hard line with these things. But it's so arbitrary. And again, this is so, I can't tell you how incredibly accurate this show is. I can't tell you just how perfectly Utah this show is, down to the crazy swig orders and the soda and the, but like things like this. There's an episode where I believe it's Macy is talking to Taylor at this plant shop, and Macy says the word shit like three times in a row. She goes like, oh, that's so shitty. I'm so sorry that happened, Taylor. Oh God, that's such bullshit. I can't believe that happened. And then she says, what the fuh? And she says the word, what the fuh? And this is, what the fuh is so Utah. It's so Utah. I grew up saying what the shit, what the fuh, all that stuff. But it's in that moment, it's like, so this girl, Macy, has decided that in her personal version of the church, shit is okay. She feels weird saying shiz or shoot or poop or crap. She wants to say shit. But she's still like, I'm not going to say the F word, though. I'm going to say fuh. And it just, it's so weird because it's like, okay, listen, girly, I totally get it. You're doing what works for you. But either swearing is bad or it isn't, right? Like either the God that you believe in doesn't want you to swear or he's cool with you swearing. It's weird that you've created a new version of that God that is like, if you were to meet him in the afterlife, he'd be like, hey, listen, between you and me, I'm totally cool with the fact that you said shit. Like I say shit. All right. Just if it's just between us, I think shit is actually totally fine. I never said anything about shit, but thank you for recognizing that the actual bad word is the F word. Thank you for saying fuh and not fuck. I appreciate that. It's like, that's how petty and weird you think your God is. And honestly, like fair, that is in many sects of Christianity, how petty God is represented to be is like, He seems to be that petty. But like the Mormon God that I was taught about growing up certainly wasn't parsing out which of the swear words were particularly bad and which ones were just kind of bad. It was just sort of like, don't use these words. At least the way that I was taught, the way that I was, and again, this is why I say there are dogmatic rules and cultural rules, because I don't remember reading anything in the Doctrine and Covenants specifically about which words are okay and which words are not. I was just taught culturally which words are okay and which words are not. Same thing kind of goes with the word of wisdom. So this is another weird spot. There's an episode where one of the girl who owns the jizz hairstyling company. And by the way, there is a girl on the show who has a hair a hair salon that is called Jizz. 100%. It's J-Z, and there's a giant line in between the J and the Z, and it her sign 100% says Jizz Hairstyling. I swear to God. And she's like, I don't know why people call it Jizz. And it's like, because you called it Jizz. But anyway, she brings her husband brings some vodka to a hot tub hang that everybody's at. And it's like such a scandal in this friend group that her husband has vodka. He's drinking vodka out of a flask and chasing it with Mountain Dew in a can, which again is the most Utah Mormon thing in the world. That is 100% the thing that somebody who only started drinking in like the last 2 years of their life, who's like 34, does. That is how a 34-year-old who started drinking for the first time at 32 drinks alcohol. They drink vodka straight out of a flask and they chase it with Mountain Dew. You are not 16 years old. You are 34. Drink whiskey like an adult. like Jesus Christ. Or if you're going to drink the vodka, mix it into a drink, like make a cocktail. What are you doing? You're drinking vodka straight out of a flask, my guy, and chasing it with Mountain Dew. That's the most Mormon thing in the world. But anyway, it's a huge controversy in the friend group. They are so scandalized by this. But then like a few episodes later, we find out that the most pious girls in the group, the girls that really think of themselves as like the stalwart, devout, you know, righteous ones in the group, we find out that one of their favorite things about going and getting Botox together is that they get to get zooted off of nitrous oxide, because the Word of Wisdom doesn't specifically mention whether or not it's good or bad to get ripped on galaxy gas, to just get yeeted on some friggin', on huffing some fucking nitrous oxide. And they're like so scandalized by this guy with his straight vodka out of a flask, but they also regularly go to get Botox just so that they can get ripped on nitrous oxide. And this is another thing about cultural rules versus dogmatic rules is like, listen, I've read the Word of Wisdom. Many Mormons, especially Utah Mormons, have not. The way Mormons are taught about the Word of Wisdom, and again, this is no shade, this is just what is true, is culturally, you are taught that the Word of Wisdom is this doctrine that exists for your personal health. And that is where you learn that it's bad to drink alcohol, it's bad to do drugs, it's bad to drink coffee or hot drinks, and that's why Mormons drink so much soda. That's the Word of Wisdom. What's interesting is this is the cultural understanding and cultural teaching of the Word of Wisdom. It is not at all the dogmatic and actual doctrine of the Word of Wisdom. The way the Word of Wisdom is actually written down, it says absolutely nothing about any of that stuff. It doesn't specifically mention alcohol. It says that everything that grows in the ground is for man's health and sustenance when used properly. So like marijuana, mushrooms, all this stuff. Like if they actually read this thing, they would understand that like, it doesn't specifically mention whether or not galaxy gas is good for you, but arguably the Word of Wisdom is significantly more pro-marijuana than it is pro-huffing chemicals to get high. Like, just like, But this is the thing about being a Mormon in Utah is most people don't actually have a working knowledge of the way that their doctrine is actually written. They have a working knowledge of the cultural application of the rules. And the cultural application says, don't smoke weed, don't eat edibles, don't drink alcohol, but go to the doctor and get just ripped on galaxy gas. Go and just huff paint thinner. Okay, you can do it. Put some paint thinner in a bag, and as long as you're at the doctor's office, huff away. Yeah, and it's just interesting, you know? I just find it very fascinating. It's been a really interesting watch, but that's not what I'm here to talk about. That's just the prologue to the show. Let's get into the main meat of the discussion today. We are coming into the final stretch of the 2024 election. And I just, you know, I'm sort of at a place as a person who dabbles in a lot of political advocacy and political messaging. I'm sort of at a place where I'm like, how, what can I say and what can I do at this point that's going to have any kind of effect? How many undecided voters are there truly in the country? Are those people actually planning on showing up to vote, on registering and filling out a ballot? Is that something they're actually going to do? Is it actually possible to sway any minds in battleground states at this point? Live visibility restricted. Your live is not eligible for recommendation. I got some kind of strike. I don't know. Maybe I said something. Maybe it was because I was talking about drugs that they restricted my live on TikTok. Whoops. I'm just sort of like, what messaging is going to be useful right now? And I'm a little bit at a loss. Because it does sort of feel like people are just more or less decided. And what I want to talk a little bit about is the shirt I'm wearing. Chapel Roan, all right? There's a reason why I'm wearing the shirt, okay? I want to make it clear. I'm not going to, like, get off the Chapel Roan train because she didn't endorse somebody or because I found the videos that she made to be a little underbaked or, like, underinformed in her takes or in her presentation. Like, the commentary I'm interested in, the discussion I want to talk about, like, first of all, I'm going to stay a fan. I can't wait for more Chapel Roan music. I'm going to continue admiring the rise of this talented young artist and cheering her on. I just don't know what we're doing in our culture where is that what we need? Are we so directionless in our political literacy and understanding that we need Taylor Swift's input, that we need Chapel Roan's input, that we need, first of all, it's weird that we put this kind of emphasis specifically on like women in pop music and men get a pass. And I don't really know why why we're focusing in so heavily on like these two particular women and I don't really understand why people decided to zero in on Chapel. Maybe it's because 2024 has been such a meteoric rise for her that the world was like, we need to know what she thinks. Here's my take on it. No, we don't. And I actually think that that's kind of Chapel's take. I think that her take is like, hey, what do you need an endorsement out of me for? Chapel Roan is, I didn't even look this up. I'm going to look right now. Okay, yeah, Chapel's older than I thought she was. I thought Chapel was like 22. She's 26. Ugh, that actually, God, that kind of hits harder. I thought she was like 22. She's 26 years old. Whatever. She's making music. That's what she's doing. And you know what? At the end of the day, she's voting for Kamala, who she calls Kamala. And listen, a lot of people were sharing this video that Chapel made. It was, I can't really blame her. Like, the internet just decided to go all in on her for like 2 weeks straight, you know, about this article that she was quoted in where she more or less said something to the effect of, there are problems on both sides. That's why I don't want to endorse anyone. And people kind of took that as, Chapel's both sidesing. Chapel, a lesbian queer artist, is both sidesing the Republican and Democratic Party in an election that's this crucial. And people kind of, I think rightly so, were like, hey, I don't like that language. And she felt the need to come out and try to defend what she was saying and defend her position because the cultural backlash was heavy enough. And it was probably a decision where she and her PR team went back and forth, like, what's the move here? Do you say something and try to address it, or do you say nothing? Me personally, I might have advocated for a message like, hey guys, like, I am not one of the great political minds of the 21st century. Here's who I'm voting for, but I think a vote is different than an endorsement, and I would rather vote than endorse. At this point, I don't feel like endorsing the Democratic Party, but I will give them my vote. And that would have been a simple enough message. I do think the video she wound up putting out, it's just, you know, I saw this video getting shared around, and people were like, the majority of comments, I was seeing on X and on Threads and on TikTok, people really seem to think that she ate with that video. People seem to think that, like, she, that was a great video, that, like, she really spoke truth in that video. And my take is, I think that it was not great. This is no smoke. This is not shade. Like, I don't expect Chapel Roan to be dropping knowledge bombs when it comes to, like, breaking down politics. That's not her zone. That's not her space. We kind of strong-armed her and forced her into making a video that felt like she was kind of muddling her way through it and sort of figuring out what she wanted to say on the fly, and it didn't feel really well thought out or really well worded. The Kamala thing was rough. Anytime I hear that, it kind of triggers this response of, like, oh, okay, you don't even know the first thing. Like, you're not involved to the level of, like, understanding that a major part of the political divide is that conservatives refuse to learn how to pronounce this woman of color's name correctly. That, like, that's a big part of the discourse, and you just did it. Like, you just were like, which says to me that, like, you're getting messaging that pronounces her name Kamala more than you are that pronounces her name Kamala. But here's the thing that I think most people feel like she ate with. The thing that people feel like, hey, that's true, that's valid, that's real, is that her sticking point is on things like the Democratic Party's response to what's happening in Gaza and with Palestine, and feeling like, hey, if you want my vote as a young person who's seeing what's happening in the world, who's having this genocide broadcast into my face and into my eyeballs through TikTok and through Instagram Reels every single day, I want to know that you give a shit about that. And if you don't, I have a very hard time getting excited about that. It's really younger voters tend to be more idealistic and hopeful than older, more jaded voters who have been a part of more election cycles in their lives and start to understand and grapple with the realities of the binary system. And I don't think that that's a flaw in younger voters. I think we need that idealism. I think it's a good thing. And I think that what people are feeling when they go, like, yeah, she ate with that, is that aspect of it. Because, hey, 100% we need a stronger response from the Democratic Party on the situation in Gaza. And I think that the majority of people who are planning to cast their vote for Kamala Harris, for Vice President Kamala Harris, agree. Like, we're not stoked on the Democratic Party's official position regarding Gaza and regarding Israel at all. We're not thrilled about it. We don't support it. We're not like excited about it. What it is we're grappling with the reality of the binary system. And even Chapel in that video says that. She's like, listen, I'm gonna vote for her. Obviously, fuck Trump, but you can't just pretend like, and I do like the sentiment that a vote is different from an endorsement. I think there are aspects of that video that really work, and the message that really work, and aspects of the message of that video that really work. It's just like, here's what it is for me. If Chapel Roan were not Chapel Roan, and Chapel Roan were just some random person without a major following who posted that video, it's a pretty unremarkable, unpiping hot political take. And it honestly sounds like someone who has not put a lot of effort into understanding the realities of the American political system and has decided, like, yeah, I get involved at a very surface level, but I don't actually really know a lot about it. All I know is that, like, I don't know, the two options seem a little insignificant, and I don't really like at all the Democratic Party's response to, the current administration's response to what's happening in Gaza. That doesn't rub me the right way, and that's what I know. But I don't really know much more beyond that. And that's how it reads to me, is like a person who's not terribly, you know, well-spoken or politically literate. And if she wasn't famous, you would just see that video and probably just keep scrolling. You probably wouldn't even watch the whole thing. You'd probably just go like, ah, this person doesn't really know what they're talking about, and that's fine, whatever. Maybe a few people in the comments would be like, hey, just so you know, like, that language when you talk about both sides sounds like you're saying that both sides are equally bad. It's a little underbaked, and it's a little surface level. But because she's famous, everyone is tuned in and rapt. Their attention is on it because it's a cultural talking point. And I just look at it and go, like, I think that the energy I get from her is, why are you making me do this? I don't really actually know enough about this to even want to talk about it. But if you need to know, yes, I'm voting for her, but here's why she doesn't get my endorsement. And I think that like that's where I think she eats in the video, is that it's like all of us, it's like, hey, who the fuck cares what this 26-year-old pop star says? Like, genuinely. But I wanted to address that because I do think heading into down the stretch of this election cycle, the only people that I'm still interested in seeing if I can appeal to are the people who really feel like Chapel ate in that video, because their holdout is that one issue. Because they look at that and they go, I feel exactly the same way. Fuck Israel, fuck what's happening in Gaza. And I feel like unless that's addressed, I can't in good conscience vote for this party. And I want to see if I can get to those people and go, listen, we're all with you. Everyone's with you. We're not voting for Harris because we love what's happening in Gaza. We're voting for Harris for all of these specific domestic reasons, but also because as it pertains to the Palestinian people, in this binary dilemma heading into November, the only possibility of hope in this scenario lies with Harris. The only glimmer of hope is with Harris. I want to read this thread that I saw today that kind of made me think, I'm going to go live and I'm going to do an episode. I'm going to read this thread and I'm just going to sort of share it in its entirety. Here we go. Pulling it up now. This is from someone on Threads. I'm on Threads, dude. I'm getting on Threads. I'm thread-pilled. I'm Threads-maxing. I'm in my Threads era. You can't stop me. Okay, there's nothing you can do about it. I'm all about Threads. This person, their handle is Love the Aftertaste. And they wrote, it's actually fucking insulting to say someone who is voting for Harris because they care about women's rights, LGBTQ rights, workers' rights, veterans' benefits, climate change, wealth distribution, corporate accountability, housing affordability, childcare, education, inflation, healthcare, court reform, student and medical debt, voting rights, immigration reform, gun violence, opioid deaths, competition with China and Russia, Ukraine, Gaza, etc., is pro-genocide. I liked the shit out of that post, out of that thread. Because when I see this, when people are like, wow, so you just support genocide, huh? You're just pro-genocide. I am insulted by it because I'm like, the exact opposite. The exact opposite. All of those things that person just said, all of those things they just listed, that's why Harris over Trump. And then when we get into Gaza again, there is only one option here that even presents the idea of hope, of the concept of the possibility of hope. Hold on. I'm going to read more from this person. They also wrote this. This Love the Aftertaste person went on in their thread. I'm just going to keep rolling through it. Tell me how the Palestinian cause is helped by you not participating in the system. Tell me how the Palestinian cause is helped by a Trump presidency. I'll tell you that Kamala Harris has called for a ceasefire and believes in the dignity and value of Palestinian lives. That's true. She's spoken those words, the dignity and value, and she's talked about the need for the liberation of these people and the dignity of these people and the safety of these people. She has spoken these words and talked about this repeatedly. She hasn't committed to everything she should, but she can be pushed into it once she's in office. She has shown she is open to discussion. Trump said Israel needs to finish what they started. Am I pro-genocide? Of course not. Am I happy about Biden's handling of Palestine? No. Do I think Harris needs to do better? Absolutely. Do I think Palestine has a better chance under a Harris presidency than a Trump presidency? Unquestionably. Also, I'm just going to finish reading it. Also, if it was true, that's completely fine. Be insulting. People who are pro-genocide absolutely deserve to be insulted. But the truth is, most people are voting for Harris because they are against genocide. They believe in human life and dignity, and they are voting for the candidate who is better across the board on humanitarian issues. This is what I'm bumping up against when people say you support genocide is I don't understand how the taking the action of refusing to participate or voting third party does anything for any single person in Gaza, how that helps. I really no one has been able to articulate to me how that is a better vote for the safety and dignity of those people. Because what all I really see when you're doing that, when you're saying I'm out, I can't participate in this, I'm washing my hands of it, or I'm voting third party for Jill Stein, all I really see is someone who is refusing to grapple with the reality of the binary choice. And that is the reality. Going into November, it will be Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. And you can say, well, it doesn't have to be that way. We could push for it to be different. We could push for reform. We could reform the Electoral College. We could push for ranked choice voting and push for validity in third party choices. Yes, yes to all of that. Yes, we got to get rid of the Electoral College. Yes, we should try to implement more, democratic voting processes like ranked choice voting. Yes, we should try to introduce powerful political viable options that can challenge the establishment powers of the Democratic and Republican Party. No, will any of that happen in any realistic world, in any universe, before November of 2024? Okay? I've used this analogy so many times. The reality of the situation is a binary choice. We are in the trolley dilemma, okay? Pull the lever, the trolley goes left, and it runs over 1,000 people. Pull the lever and the trolley goes right, it runs over 100,000 people. And I'm going to say in this dilemma, you pull the lever either way. You got to make an active choice. You got to pull the lever this way or that way. You got to steer it. You steer it right, runs over, I'm going to even say 1,000,000 people. Pull it left, runs over 1,000 people. You don't want it to run over anybody. You're like, I don't want to participate in a choice that runs over anybody. I want to turn the trolley into a jetpack. I want to build a third track that doesn't run over anyone. And I look at that and I go, I hear you. I want that too. I would love to turn the trolley into a jet that picks up off the tracks and flies over all the people and flies to safety. That would be awesome. That'd be really cool. Maybe we should talk about how we could do that. What the funding would be like, what the process would be like to do that. We're not going to do it before November. That is the reality. And if you just sort of bury your head and cover your ears and go, la, 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 I'm voting third party or I'm not participating, you're just lying to yourself. You're not doing anything. You're saying my hands are clean of this, but they're not. What you're doing is you're giving strength to the opposition vote. If you were a person who, if you were forced to, you had to pick one or the other, if you would vote for Harris, if you were absolutely forced to, then that means that the absence of your vote strengthens a Trump ticket. And I think the way a lot of people justify this, who are hardliners on Gaza, who say, I just can't be pro-genocide, I can't support genocide, I think the way that they justify this in their head is they say, well, it's essentially no different. There, I see no meaningful, significant distinction between these two parties, and that's how they justify it in their head. That's how they justify washing their hands and stepping back and saying, I don't want to participate. But again, that is a self-deception. You are engaging in self-deception when you do that. You're being like my Mormon friends from the first half of the episode who are pretending like the girls from Mormon Housewives don't accurately represent them. You're pretending like there is no meaningful distinction here when there very clearly is a very real and very obvious and very glaring distinction here, okay? There is one candidate who has openly spoken about trying to fight for a ceasefire, a two-state solution, and the dignity and safety and liberation of Palestinian people, and another candidate who has said, in no uncertain terms, I want to help Israel finish the job they started, and I want to close the chapter on any possibility of hope. So even if you say, I don't believe Kamala Harris, or I don't think that her language goes far enough, or I don't think that her advocacy for Palestinian life goes far enough, valid, fair, you can't deny the fact that at least rhetorically, in the rhetoric that they're sharing on the campaign trail, there is a distinct and significant difference. So even if you don't trust this rhetorical difference, it represents a glimmer of hope. In this election cycle, as in so many election cycles, but particularly in this one, because this is the one we're talking about, there are many significant existential crises that we are facing as a species. Climate change. The impending climate death of our species, you know, due to our relentless assault on our climate with our increased modern industrialization of the planet. You know, killing the planet for profit. This is a massive existential crisis that faces that threatens the life and the prosperity of the species. It doesn't really feel like either the Democratic or the Republican Party has any real vested interest in like really attacking climate change in a serious, big way that could actually make a dent in it. But there definitely is a difference, at least policy-wise and rhetorically, in how these two parties approach the policies they put forward, the policies they advocate for, the policies they vote for, the legislation they vote for. There's definitely a very clear difference when you look at the voting record of Democrats in Congress versus Republican Congress when it comes to climate change. So even if you think that it's just, you know, cosmetic or it doesn't amount to enough, we're in a situation that feels hopeless. We're in a situation where it feels like there is no visible light, where pretty much the global majority of scientists on this issue have said, we've missed the deadline. Like the deadline to turn the ship around, we missed it a while ago. The new deadline is now to just maybe lessen the severity of what's going to happen to us. It feels very hopeless. And it feels like a situation where you just want to go, you know what? I'm washing my hands. I'm stepping away from it. But at least with the part in a binary situation where you are just given two options, there is one option that is at least presenting. So you're in this goo, this bog where it's really hard to see the light, where it feels like there is no clear path forward. There's one option that is at least offering you the glimmer, the specter of hope. It might feel faint. It might feel like a long shot. It might feel hard to trust. It might feel like a thing that is too little and does not deliver enough, but it is the glimmer, the representation, the idea, the concept of the potential of hope, of something being done about climate change, versus the other option, which is we're closing the book on hope. We're closing the chapter and saying definitively, we are not going to fix this. We are going to drive the species into the ground with what we're doing to the climate. And those are your two options. And I know that those options seem bleak, but to pretend that there is no meaningful distinction between the possibility of hope for the survival of the species as it pertains to climate change and the absolute absence of hope, you're not being serious there. You're not being honest with yourself when you approach it that way. And it's the same way when it comes to Gaza. So when this person on Threads says, we are not voting for Harris because we are pro-genocide. We are voting because we are anti-genocide. We believe that our vote is the only vote that represents a real possibility of hope for the Palestinian people. A third-party vote doesn't do it. Third-party vote is nothing. That is nothing. There is no actual actionable way that a third-party vote turns into, materializes into, positive action that advocates for the life and safety and dignity of the people in Gaza. Third-party vote doesn't get it done. There's nothing there. Not participating does not get it done. There is no way that not participating and washing your hands results in positive action for the Palestinian people. Letting Trump win, standing back and saying, I don't care who wins. I see no meaningful distinction here. If Trump wins, that's fine. I don't care. There is no hope with Trump. That is, so when we actually get down to our two binary options, there is one option that says we are going to close the book on the possibility of hope for the people in Palestine. And I cannot wrap my head around how someone can say, I just cannot do anything that would be supporting genocide, but step back and let Donald Trump win. How you can simultaneously say, I cannot be complicit in genocide, but I can be complicit in letting the guy win who would assure that the genocide is completed, that the story is over, that we close the book, that we eliminate the possibility of hope. You are being given a very bleak binary option. One of the options is offering you the rhetorical possibility of hope, saying, hey, we want to find a solution that saves as many lives as possible and that honors the dignity and the freedom of these people. but we're going to have to do it through this kind of complicated process. And they're offering this outside chance. And you say, that's insufficient. That's not enough. And I get that. But the other person saying, I just want to finish the job and make sure that every man, woman, and child doesn't make it out alive and that we just actually wipe them all out. And it's the guarantee that it will happen. And I don't see how you can claim to care about those people and say, I don't actually care which one of these two options becomes president. I don't actually care. I see no meaningful distinction between them. I see no meaningful distinction between the possibility of hope and the absence of hope. As far as I'm concerned, they're both the same, and I wash my hands of this. To me, that is saying, I give up. I refuse to even try. I give up, and I'm just going to let the fate of the Palestinian people, it's just going to happen however it's going to happen. And I get how bleak decisions like this make people feel hopeless. I get how it feels like, you know what, I'm just going to, but like, you have the opportunity to at least cast a vote for someone that represents the outside glimmering faint possibility, as insufficient as that is, if it's all you have, if it's the last thing that you're given is, do you want to try one more thing or do you want to give up? And you say that you care, I think you have to try that one last thing. Even if you're like, I have no confidence that this one last thing is even going to work. I have no but it, at least it's an actual option that, like, my vote for Kamala Harris will actually have the potential of turning into something. A vote for Kamala Harris actually has the potential to turn into a Harris presidency. A vote for Jill Stein does not have the possibility of turning into a Stein presidency. It's not a real thing. An abstention vote has the possibility of turning into nothing. Saying you don't care, to me, says you don't care about the fate of those people. So when I see someone saying, oh, you're voting for that, you must be pro-genocide, I'm like, I really think that you're missing the mark there. I'm voting for the exact opposite reason of that. Because I care about human rights here in America, because I care about the, like, rights of marginalized communities here, because I care about reproductive freedom, because I care about doing something about the massive problem we have with corporate greed and the greed of our top economic class. And because I care about giving those people a fighting chance, giving those people something. It's a very bleak situation. It's a very bleak existential threat for those people. And it's very hard to see many pathways that look viable and that look workable. It's a binary choice, and it's one that says there's a faint glimmer of light in this direction, and in this direction, it's the certainty of death. And if you really feel like you care, I don't see how you don't go, I'm going to do whatever I can to give them whatever chance I possibly can. And even Chappell is saying that in her video. She's saying, I don't like it. I don't want to endorse it. I don't want to sign off on it and say, this has my full endorsement, but they will get my vote. And I hope, if there's even one person out there who feels like they can't participate because of this issue, I hope you can hear what I'm saying here, that, like, no one's voting for Harris because they don't care about those people. It's the opposite. We see it as the last only thing that we can do going into November. Even if it's insufficient, even if it's not enough. And it's the same with things like climate change. It's the same with things like all world wars and, you know, nuclear arsenals and stuff like that. You have to vote in the direction of hope, even when it feels insufficient. Even when it feels like there's no way that we can, overcome the massive obstacles in our path. What I see with third party votes and with people washing their hands of the process is people who are saying, I give up, I quit. And I do not see how that translates into positive action for the causes you claim to care about. Okay. Going to comments here. Somebody who it says DJ Jabronius on TikTok says, Democrats literally sue third-party candidates off the ballot. Here's the thing with third-party candidates, and I've said this in other podcast episodes, and I've said this in lots of videos that I've made. You've got to make them viable at the local level, and you've got to build up third-party viability and third-party power. You've got to show that third-party candidates can win elections, that a vote for a third-party candidate is not a throwaway vote, and you've got to do that at the local level. You can't show up every 4 years and expect to compete in the biggest election in the country, one of the biggest elections in the world, every 4 years. Is this person saying, so you're really okay with suing candidates off the ballot? It doesn't matter what I'm okay with and what I'm not okay with. I'm not the Democratic Party. I'm not the person doing it. I'm reckoning with the reality of the situation in front of you. The reality is you have two options. I don't really care how we got there. I'm saying if you want the Green Party, if you want the third party to be viable in a presidential election, you've got to figure out a way to make that party institutionally viable. You need to give them institutional power and show that they can win elections on consistently and build up a coalition for those votes, for that power. One of the problems with third party votes is they show up every 4 years for presidential elections and they can't even decide who they want their person to be. So even amongst the relatively small faction of people who are willing to vote Green and vote third party, they can't decide if they want it to be RFK or Jill Stein or what's the other guy? Can't think of his name right now, but there were like four of them that everyone couldn't decide between. And even when you wind up deciding on one of those candidates, you don't have anywhere near the numbers that you need. I don't think people realize like how many people 80 million people is. That's around the numbers your coalition needs to be at before you can compete in a serious way in a presidential election. Project Darkwood says on YouTube, I'm going to be real honest. I don't realistically think humanity is going to solve climate change. However, I'm still going to vote in a way that at least opens up the door to the possibility. That's exactly what I'm saying is I don't blame you for not having a lot of faith in humanity's ability to actually solve climate change at this point, especially given the just the human propensity for greed and just the fact that like corporations and greedy billionaires will literally do anything in the name of profit, even if all of the best science in the world is telling them you're killing the species with what you're doing. They're like, but I'm buying yachts in the process, so I'm with you. But I also agree that like if you're going to be politically active, if you're going to participate in politics, you've got to vote for the option that gives you the best chance at combating that stuff. let's see. James Emerson says, saw you live and immediately jumped on. I agree with every issue I have ever heard you touch on. I appreciate all you do and will absolutely be watching your... Okay, well, this is just a nice comment. Thanks for the nice comment, James. I appreciate that. This person, D. Jabronius, is still saying, neither of these parties are helpful. So I gotta be honest here, pal. I don't think that you're not as politically literate or informed as you think you are, which I think is more probably the case. I want to know what you know that I don't, because a lot of times when I hear people say this, like I get, you can list a bunch of reasons why the Democratic Party is fucked up and why the corporate sponsors and donors and the money that the corporate interests that have bought and paid for Democratic candidates and their policies that have not worked or that have served their kind of rich donors and stuff like that. Of course you can. Money in politics is a major problem. It's also the way that politics works in America, and it's the way that candidates actually have viability in big races in America. You gotta kind of play the game in order to be a player in the game. But whenever people say this who are like Green Party voters or third party voters, I'm just like, I don't think you're aware of all of the things that Democratic politicians actually accomplish and vote for versus the things that Republican parties vote for. So when you say neither of these parties are helpful, you might be able to give cherry-picked examples of both parties doing things that don't work, but like, overall, if you actually look at the voting record, this person that I'm talking to says, oh, but please condescend to me more. I absolutely will, because you continue to be a person that seems to require condescension in order to like be spoken to. Like you could, I mean, The bottom line is, if you look at the voting record of Democrats in Congress versus Republicans in Congress, of Democratic senators versus Republican senators, it's really, really clear the ideological differentiation between the two. You can find cherry-picked examples of both parties doing things that wound up not being helpful or not being useful, but to pretend like they are just two identical things and they are they have no significant difference between what they've tried to do on existential issues like climate change or things like gun safety or things like healthcare, reforming the healthcare system, economic reform, infrastructure reform. To pretend like there is no significant distinction between them, I just don't think that you're actually engaging in politics in a really serious way. I think that you're looking at specific examples of like when a Democrat did something that wound up not being really working versus looking at the overall trend of the two parties and the policies that they advocate for the majority of the time over time. Oh, you know, the trends going back 40, 50 years of these two parties, there's a very clear delineation. And the thing that always stops us is people like you, is voters that flip-flop every election cycle. The voters like the guy that, went onto Trump's golf course with a gun, who had voted for Trump in one election, then voted for Biden in another election. This kind of person who's just like so dissatisfied with not having candidates that meet every single one of the items on their wish list, that they're constantly flip-flopping back and forth. That's why swing states exist. That's why we constantly have to shift power back and forth, because the reality is Republicans don't win popular votes. Their policies are unpopular amongst the majority of voters, election in and election out. And if we had a more democratic system that didn't rely on the Electoral College, Democrats would never lose another election, and we would actually be able to see the fruits of democratic policies and democratic legislation instead of constantly having to shift the scales of power back and forth so that nothing ever really does get done. But when you actually look at what each party is attempting to accomplish, that's where you see the delineation. You can't necessarily look at the results of, oh, this person was in office for these 4 years and this is what happened to the economy, therefore this party is bad. You have to look at what is each party attempting to do, what seems to be their overall goal, and there is very clear delineation between the two. Yeah, DD4U says, we don't all agree, so we have to compromise for the greater good. This is how coalitions work. I have a whole episode on this podcast called The Power of Working as a Coalition. That's the problem, especially working in the coalition on the left. The left is a lot more ideologically diverse than the right is, and it means that our coalition is a lot harder to please. It means that the coalition of voters on the left are a lot harder. It's a lot harder to find policies that please everyone, which means that a lot of people, especially the further left you go, wind up having to compromise on a lot of things, and they don't really get everything that they want. But when you're presented with the binary choice of the establishment powers, and one of them is clearly offering a decidedly more progressive platform than the other, and you pretend like there's no significant difference between them, I don't know. Like, get out of the way then. Like, what's really frustrating is that we wouldn't even need to try to convince these people if we just had a popular vote. If we just had a popular vote, it would be done. It would be no problem, you know? Let's see here. Let's see. Someone's asking me to summarize the entire podcast episode right now. I can't do that. Sorry. This will be a thing on my YouTube channel, so you can just watch the video from the beginning when it goes on my YouTube, or you can listen to it on Spotify, but I'm not going to go over that whole thing. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Fishing Doc on TikTok just said, why are there only 30-some-odd of us in here? Yeah, TikTok gave my live a couple strikes, and I think that they significantly... I already don't get a lot of people at my lives because TikTok doesn't promote them, but I was talking about drug use earlier in the episode, and I think that they lowered the viewership because I was doing that. But whatever. We've got about 30 people left on YouTube as well, 30 people over on TikTok. We'll call it good. We got a nice little audience of 60 people. Thanks for the feedback, everybody. I'm going to wrap it up there. Those are my thoughts. Get registered to vote if you're not already. You know, if you are out there and your sticking point is Gaza, I really do believe that if you actually care about these people, if you actually care about their lives, you only have one option. There's only one option that is representing even the outside possibility of hope for these people. And if you actually care about them, you have to take that option. If you're saying, I don't really care who wins the election because they're both complicit in this terrible thing, what you're saying is, I don't care about even trying to do anything to help these people because I can't have the perfect solution, so I'm not even going to try. And that, to me, doesn't actually say that you will do anything in your power to help. Yeah, somebody just put in the comments, vote.org. Absolutely, vote.org. Check it out. Let's get this done. Let's. What's really cool, what I'm really excited about, is the possibility of ending the Trump political era. We really are so close to potentially being done with this nightmare we've all been living through. Like, we can put it to bed. We can close the chapter. I hope we can. All right. Who knows when I'll do another episode of People Pleaser. But check out the Oneer podcast. It's my new podcast with my best friend Kramer England. We're breaking down movies, and it's a lot more lighthearted and fun than this podcast. And it's a good watch if you like people just breaking down movies and stuff. We're off to the races over there. You can find the Oneer podcast on my YouTube channel or on my Spotify. This podcast, People Pleaser, is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more on my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com or austin-archer.com or looking up Austin Archer wherever you stream music, okay? Check it out. All right. Support what I do here by going to patreon.com/Austin Archer. Shout out to all of my Patreon patrons. You are the wind beneath my wings. You keep me going. Thank you. And really, we got so much more room over there for people who want to like help this show continue chugging forward. I don't get a lot of, you know, brands sponsoring my podcast or sponsoring my channels. So that viewer support is really, really important. And check us out if you want to. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. I would greatly appreciate the support. Okay, everybody. We'll see you next time. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye. Should only mean that I'm in touch with my mom.